As part of our library's Native American Heritage Month, the Octavia Flynn Children's Library will be presenting Native author and illustrator Daniel Vandiver for a reading and author talk featuring his children's book, Fall in Line Holden. The event takes place Saturday, November 18th at 2 p.m. For more information, you may call 505-726-6120.
I'm here with Daniel Vandiver, who is by day a public relations maven at Navajo Technical University, and by night a writer of children's books. Is this your first book, Daniel?
Yes, this is my first book, Rachel, and you're too kind for that introduction. I'd just like to go ahead and introduce myself in Navajo, Daniel Vandiver Yenishia. Irish and Schley, Kiani Bushes Chin, Irish Dashiche, Aro Tachini Dashanella, Zolzil, Dena Sha, Rozislechi, De Shuhuan, Akut Ego Dena and Schley.
Tell me a bit about the book, Fall in Line Holden.
Right, yeah, and it's a story about a kid and his classmates and their journey from class to recess, and where they're asked to fall in line, single file line, as they march through the hallways. They often overlook things, his classmates do, and Holden's imagination takes him to different settings, different interpretations of what they pass. So he oftentimes falls out of line. So it's just a continuation of his journey through the hallways of his school, and painting what he sees as opposed to what his classmates miss as they fall in line.
Did you want to read an excerpt from Fall in Line Holden?
Yeah, I could basically read the prelude, I guess, or I guess the intro to the story, which is basically setting the stage for what's about to happen. So it's before we're introduced to Holden. It begins. Deep in the heart of Indigenous Nation stood a strict Western school of stern education, where everyone obeyed and did what they were told, and conformity ruled all to fit like a mold, until a boy fell out of line.
Is this story set a few years ago when the BIA schools were a little more rigid, or is it set more currently?
It's set in the current times, but it's kind of paying homage to the boarding school period of education. When I wanted to write it, I wanted to tell my father's story in a way. And, you know, growing up, you always hear his stories of what he went through, you know. And so I wanted to kind of bring back that story and blend it with modern times. So you'll see the school he marches through is more modern. They do have a computer lab and things of that nature. But it's really set and speaks to that time period my father went to school.
Now, was it your grandfather who was a code talker?
Yes, my grandfather, Joe Vandiver Sr., was a code talker.
And was your grandfather in the BIA schools?
No, he didn't go through all of that. He actually was grown up in he was born in Sawmill, New Mexico, which is out up in the Zuni Mountains, and that's how he was raised, you know, out with his family, his grandparents. And I think by the time he was 16, he got into the Marines earlier than what he was supposed to. He lied about his age, and so that was his schooling, you know. He went off into the military and fought a war, and he was basically, you know, put to work by his family, and he earned a living, you know. So he never went through the boarding school era. It wasn't until my father's generation that he really went into that.
Well, that's another book.
Yeah.
But your father was in that generation at BIA schools. Was your father in several BIA schools over the years?
Yeah. So he started in locally. So I'm from Haystack, New Mexico. That's where my grandfather's family's from and where they ended up settling. And so he started over here at Baca, the boarding school there, and went over to Wingate. But my father, he's kind of like Holden. He had a wild imagination, was always into things. And so he didn't really like how the boarding school was structured. And he ended up running away from there twice. And, you know, if you know Wingate to Haystack, that's about 40 miles of walking, you know, and him and his brothers, they did that. And so he ended up getting transferred over to Crown Point. So he ended up going to the Crown Point boarding school and same thing. And so eventually he ended up going into one of the placement programs and was living with a Mormon family up in Utah in Park City for a while. So he kind of was everywhere, you know, and that's kind of how my family is.
Well, there were children that were kind of stolen away from their families during that period.
Yeah, and I think for him it was a thing of survival, you know, having a meal to eat and, you know, just experiencing that. And, you know, I think that's what the boarding school kind of drove him towards too, you know, finding something else and getting into Utah and experiencing that. But, you know, it was a major impact on his life, I think, across the board. That was a whole generation, you know, who went through that of being told, you know, who their identity should be and, you know, forbidden to speak language and not practice culture. That, you know, what is that impact on things? And that's why I really wanted to bring this book to light, is to start conversations around that period of time, because, you know, where is that really happening? What more intimate of a conversation could you have than over a children's book with a grandchild or a child, you know? And so I think it's very necessary for this message to get out, and I'm really privileged to at least be the one carrying it forth with this book.
One of the reasons I mentioned your grandfather, and while he was not affected by this directly, there were individuals who were in the BIA schools were discouraged from using their family's language. And some of those students, when the military needed to establish a code-talking program, their language was essential. So some of these students who were exposed to this stricture in the BIA schools, kind of like Holden being told, you can't say this, if they really minded everybody and did what they were told, then there would have been no code talkers for the most part, except for a few.
Exactly, yeah, and I think that's something that, you know, my grandfather always stresses, especially just with your language. He says your words are powerful, you know. With what you say, you have the opportunity to make somebody's day or break it, you know. The words are that powerful, and, you know, to have that happen to us as Dene, I think that's something that's really unfortunate, but it is kind of one of those things like, whoa, you know, this is being taken away from us, but look what the impact it has in saving millions and millions of lives and having the power to end war, you know. It's something that I think is important to bring to light, because if you hamper that, if you hamper any type of voice, and you look at it in the landscape today, you know, across any type of people, that's really being, you know, stressed is you have to be this certain way, or it's done this way. And you know, when you do that, you limit beautiful things, and you see the power of something like language. And when it's tied to us as Dene people, that's really powerful, you know, to have something that relays who we are, you know, and identity is tied with that. So I think it's really important for this book to get out on across several generations. You know, you look at the early literacy problems right now, too, and how can this further improving that?
We should mention as we go along that you're going to be reading from your book and talking a bit about it at the Octavia Fallin Children's Library.
Yes.
On Saturday, November 18th. I think around 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I will be speaking here locally, and that's something that I've really been trying to push recently. Fortunately, I get to travel a lot with my job, and whenever I'm in different communities, I always get an invite to go and speak. And I, like I said, you know, what's more intimate than having a conversation about these things, you know, especially how intricate they can get. So I've been making a lot of appearances. Tomorrow I'm going to be on November 4th, giving a presentation in Arizona at the Museum of Northern Arizona. Just last week, I was in Saley, Arizona at the elementary school, reading to kids. So I've been everywhere. I even made a trip out to St. Louis, Missouri. I grew up in high school. I went to McClure North High School, which was in the Ferguson-Florissant district. And, you know, everything that's going on in that community, they really wanted to bring me back and deliver this message. And so just getting out there and discussing it, because it's across the nation, you know, this type of message, creativity, suppression, you know, it's something that if anyone has a kid going through the school system these days, they're experiencing it, you know, with the cuts to funding to the arts programs, physical education, music, and these all make appearance within the book, you know. So this is a message that I'm really just trying to get out there and start conversations, because it applies to everybody today, you know.
Even in public school systems throughout the United States and probably in other parts of the world, there is a tendency to want to shoehorn students into a particular plan, into a particular path, and label them and define them. Oh, you're on the fast track. You're gifted, and oh, you're a slow learner. You get to go there, and oh, you're not good at math, so we're going to put you there.
And even take it further with testing, you know, and the funding that's associated with that. And now kids are just being kind of taught to take tests, and what does that do to their creativity and even how they understand and grasp these concepts? So it's all across the board that I think that this has a huge impact. And I think if we could just start these conversations around something as simple as, you know, creativity, and it's something that everybody could relate to and have feelings or discussions about. So I'm really privileged to not only get invites from schools, but high schools, at colleges. I spoke at Navajo Technical University where I work. And then here, you know, in Gallup at the library, I think those types of discussions that engages everybody, you know, kids, adults, community members, is really needed, you know, because I think by taking a comprehensive approach to the situation, you really get a good grasp of what the problem is and how do you move forward with it. You know, I think you have to include everybody. You can't really leave anybody out. And that's one of the things I noticed, you know, coming back and working on the Navajo Nation after living away in Missouri for 14 years and coming back and seeing, you know, there's a big intergenerational disconnect that's I see at home, in the workplace, in the community. And I think a lot of that stems from this era of education where this whole entire generation of people were told who they were, how to think, and you know, what is that impact? And you see it across the board. A lot of the problems that we're facing economically, socially, stem from that. And, you know, having these conversations is at least one step towards addressing it in a meaningful and practical way.
There were a lot of kids that went through the BIA systems that were really messed up mm-hmm. by that experience. And it took a lot of strength for a lot of these kids to survive, let alone wipe off the grime that they got from the authoritarianism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole concept, I mean, it's a concept that we hear generally in public schools. You know, when you force kids to color within the lines and they aren't allowed to go outside the lines,
mm-hmm.
outside the lines is sometimes where that creativity blossoms.
Right. And that's something, too, with kids, you know, they're not all troublemakers. They don't all want to be bad. And there's oftentimes some kids who get labeled that, you know. I was kind of that creative, free-thinking kind of kid who was sliding in the hallways on his knees, getting in trouble, you know. But I wasn't a troublemaker. I was just someone who saw the world a little bit differently, you know. And oftentimes I think these kids are put into that category as they're just a rabble-rouser or somebody who kind of likes to get, you know, into mischief. But are they being catered in a way? Are they being, you know, allowed to be who they are and have their lives kind of altered in a way where you see them and what their perspective is and kind of foster that rather than kind of say that's not how it's supposed to be, you know? And so I think this book also speaks to those kids as well, you know?
Well, I'm sure that there was some research involved in this book, but also your father probably had some stories about his experiences in the BIA schools that made themselves part of your story for Holden.
Yeah, yeah. And I think his are a little bit more harsh that you can't really put into a children's book. You know, he talks about the haircuts they used to get, and he used to have a little patch where his bangs would be. That'd be the only hair he had on his head, because if they got in trouble, they would get pulled around by that, you know. And he talks about those types of things, or you talk about, you know, him stuffing the backside of his pants so whenever he get hit, would it hurt, you know? So you can't really put that into a children's book, but I think there's certain tactics that I tried to put in there that relay that militant type of mentality, because it is written kind of in a cadence. So it's from the perspective of the students as they march through the school. You hear that, you know, how they march and how it kind of moves. And then even how it's kind of designed. I think some people say the design within it. So I did author and illustrate the book based on some of the computer graphics I've picked up working for NTU. But what I noticed is that they're all kind of muted out in color. So they're all in black except for Holden, who has the only color as they march through the book. But you see that and you're like, oh, it kind of puts you in a depressed mood. But that's what it was like, you know, everybody being uniform and everybody being told to think and act the same way. And so you see little hints of that, you know, it's not as harsh as what my father would describe, but, you know, you still feel it.
There's a certain irony if you look at some of the history of the BI schools that, if you look at Fort Wingate, it's the only instance, I believe, where a federal fort was converted into a BIA school. And so essentially that regimentation kind of filtered right through to the school.
Yeah.
But there is also some discussion of the potential for developing the Fort Wingate school site as, a national monument, museum, etc. Not because we want to celebrate what happened there, but because it is part of a history.
Yeah. And I think that's something that is kind of one of those things where how do you walk that fine line? You know, how do you bring up that troubled past, but then also possibly use it as an educational tool so it doesn't happen again, you know, as a reminder. And it's one of those things. These buildings are living beings in their own sense, you know, with the history and everything that goes into them. Just a few years ago, they knocked down the boarding school in Crown Point, you know, and I was trying to think about that too, you know. Was that a good thing? Was it bad? And just talking with people, it's on both sides. And that's really what I like this book to be about too, is just forming some type of dialogue. Right now, it's just in physical form as a book. But the next step I'd like to take it is to put it into an app and then make it a read through. And so you're able to interact with it in a more meaningful way, possibly click on Holden and he giggles, change the language from not only English, but now it's in Navajo, Spanish, you know, Portuguese. And then you're also able to possibly incorporate links to maybe firsthand accounts, oral histories. So that's what I'd like to do. I'd like to get with students at Navajo Technical University and create this next level, have our new media students create these oral history videos paired with our students on our master's degree program in Diné Culture, Language, and Leadership. So those resources are there, but these stories could go so much further than just this book, and I think the app is that next level. Even getting with our early childhood students and possibly developing curriculum around this book, so if students were to be learning this back out in Missouri, they don't just have one lesson on Native American history once a month or maybe once a day during November. When that comes up, you know, it's something that could be generated beyond that, so that's what I'd like to take it to the next level, is being able to take those stories and put it into the virtual world. You know, this is 2017. You have the ability to bring these stories and have a forum online or in some space, you know, to tell them. And so it's not going to be me telling these stories. I'm hoping to bring everybody's stories in and then just providing that space.
And maybe that app or another app could incorporate some elements of game design too. So
yeah, yeah.
You have a section where he actually has to stay within a line.
Yeah,
But if he figures out how to go outside the line without getting in trouble, he can get extra points.
So. Yeah, and that's what the imagination provides. You know, if you're creative and you have that mindset, this book, this message could go that many different ways. And I think that's something that I think I'd like to pursue, you know, because it has that weight, it has that interaction, which again adds more to that experience for the reader, the child, or whoever it may be.
So I mentioned that, you know, certainly you have enough history in your family and those stories that there's probably more than one book in you. You worked on this one for a number of years, as I recall.
Yeah,
from my reading.
Yeah. Well, actually, I started it as a story for my nephew, He, like me, had a creative imagination. So really, his name is Holden. That's where the name came from. So it was really kind of a combination of my story, my nephew's, and then my dad's. So when it came to the next book, I think he wants at least three more Holden books. You know, Fall in Line Holden, Raise Your Hand Holden, whatever that could lead. But I do have six more nieces and nephews, so that's six more books I got to write, you know. So I always say that I have six more in line, but I really would like to go different ways with this, you know. I think this is a book for children, maybe grades, you know, kindergarten through third. But I'd like to go into young adult, you know, possibly. I like poetry. I have a series of poems that are more kind of the essence of Shel Silverstein, but putting that perspective of out here on the Navajo Nation, you know, where could that lead? I like writing for screenplays. I like writing scripts, you know, and background in communications. I have experience writing commercials for 30 seconds and 60 seconds, and that's pretty tough, you know, being able to compress this big message down to 30 seconds. I think if I were to go beyond that, that would be a breeze, you know. Give me a whole book, you know, I could fill it up like nothing, but at least I feel like I can. So I think I like to go many different directions, and, you know, even learning how to do the programming behind creating the app behind Fall in Line Holden, that would be something I'd be interested in, you know. I think creating the book myself from scratch is something that's special about it as well, and if I could learn and have the skills to do that across various mediums, I think that's something that would be beneficial to me as a individual and for anything I produce.
So I'm speaking with Daniel Vandiver about a book, Fall in Line Holden. It's a children's or intermediate.
Yeah, I say it's for children, but even adults, I always say this is going to change your life once you read it. So,
and you're doing a presentation on it in Gallup at the Octavia Fallin Children's Branch Library on Saturday, November 18, 2 p.m. And question comes up when we talk about writers. What was involved in publishing?
I actually kind of got lucky and stumbled across a nice situation. I actually began the book in about 2010, I think, is when I started it with just sketches, and it kind of went into the back of my mind. I forgot about it, lost the sketches, or whatever the reason was. But in 2015, I ended up bringing it back and digitized it. I actually put the drawings and put it into my computer, and it was just a rough story, and but it was something. And after I was getting ready to give it to my nephew as a present, I ran into a friend whose cousin is the art director for Salina Bookshelf, and they were looking for new books, and I mentioned that I had written one, and he asked me to shoot it over, and they'd just review it, and I was just asking basic question, if I were to get this publication ready, what did it need? And little did I know, he passed it straight on to the president, the owner. And they loved it. And I think what they were looking for was a book that was more contemporary. If you look at their repertoire, it's a lot of more traditional type of books, Grandma and Me, The Sun, things like that. So this is more modern and had more of a modern design. And because I did it all myself, I think that was another appeal. So after they saw it, they were really all on board for it. But there were certain things that they had to see. A children's book has to be 32 pages. Mine was probably around 24, so I had to add some side ventures for Holden. They wanted to see some character development, which was hard for me because Holden was the actualized person in the story. How do you show that? So how I did that was I showed it within the other students. So each venture, each time he fell out of line, you'll notice as the students progress, a head turns and they take notice. So things like that I had to go back and do. So Salina only reviews books once a year in June. And so I had a whole year to make these corrections. At the time, I was getting my master's degree in community development in the MCRP program at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. And I forgot all about it until about a month before it was due again. So I hurried up and made those corrections, really put what it needed in it. In there, and then resubmitted it, and fortunately they were all for it, and received word about it, and they put it to production, worked with the art director Corey Begay out of Flagstaff, and put the final touches, and because it was basically a finished product, we were able to put it to press really quick.
So will this be largely a printed book? Will there be some, you know, ebook versions? Will there be some online versions?
I want to go every which way, Rachel. So ebooks, online versions, we'll get the app going. We're already getting kind of some ideas thrown around with some programmers and people who work in computer science. And every which way, like I said, we want to go into curriculum possibly. But I think right now I'm just focusing on getting this word out there, visiting people and being able to interact with them face to face, because like I said, that's really powerful. And I'm noticing a reaction from it, you know, from people who experience it in their own way. It doesn't necessarily have to be that boarding school perspective. It's the people who feel the creativity suppression. That's the thing too, you know, the boarding school, everybody had a different experience. It wasn't always negative for everybody. For instance, it was a means of survival for some families. If they didn't have that as a meal, then they would have possibly starved. There were those who got to wash the headmaster's car, and so they got money, and they were the ones who got to eat popcorn during movie day or whatever it was, you know. So there were those different perspectives. So I think what's cool about this is having this interaction, you're hearing all of it, you know, and it's really motivating me to start something on a bigger scale where those discussions can take place, including more people.
Well, who knows how this experience is going to affect your future? You just might have a change in occupation in the coming years.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at the very least, who knows, there might be an opportunity to teach a writing course.
Yeah, it's been difficult for me because, you know, working in marketing, advertising, you're the behind-the-scenes type of person. And you're not really out there, but I'm really enjoying, you know, meeting new people and being put in these new situations where I'm just starting these discussions and conversations. And I'm one of those people who don't like being settled with one thing. I think that's what's great about Navajo Technical University is I'm learning something new every day. I'm having to learn different processes every day. I'm having to learn about advanced manufacturing and 3D printing and, you know, even working in early childhood education, working with those students, you see a different perspective. And then the master's degree, of course, but you know, I'm always learning something new, and I think I have the means and resources there to be able to go any direction. You know, I like listening to music. I like making music. Who says I can't be a musician next, too, you know? That's one of the things about Shel Silverstein, too. He was kind of everywhere as well, and I really admire that, you know, that multi abilities that he has to deliver his message, whether it's music or poetry or song. You know, that's something that I think is very...
Yeah, that you're going to need a score for the animated version of Holden.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We'll do
that
first.
That'll be in the app or the game. Or,
yeah.
All right. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners about either the November 18th event here in Gallup or about the book or about anything else?
I'm really privileged, I feel, to be speaking on this subject matter and to be interacting with people and carrying this message. I think in Gallup, in Haystack, in Crown Point, in St. Louis, across the nation, this is something that needs to be said. And I think falling out of line is something that we could all do, you know, every now and then. Just don't go too far, you know. But like I said, I'm really blessed to be caring for this message. And come visit me, you know, on the 18th and at the library, I think. We'll have a conversation.
Before we leave, how important, you know, there's a lot of younger people in the area who really haven't learned much of the Navajo language or of their stories of their ancestors as much as maybe would have been the case even a generation ago. Are there ways that books and media can improve that, you know, for instance, you know, dubbing Star Wars and finding Nemo into Danette?
Yeah, I think any angle you can take, I think it's something that's really necessary. I think it's almost a state of an emergency for the Navajo Nation just because of how fast and how quick that fluency dropped. You know, I think years ago it was 60 and now it's in the 20s possibly. I forget, I read a statistic somewhere, but you know, it's a big part into identity as well if you're Navajo is having that language because it's tied to the songs, it's tied to the prayers, it's tied to, like I said, the identity as an individual. So it's something that I think it it's necessary to attack it and address it in different ways, whether that's a movie, whether it's an app or a book, or just a university, you know, having classes available to teach that, because not everybody has the grandparents or parents who grew up with that as well. So it's something that needs to be addressed from various different levels. And if an app could make a change, that's what I would like to produce. If the movie is the route, then let's do it, you know. So I think it's very necessary, because if we go back to my grandfather, you know, words are powerful. You have the ability to make someone's day or, you know, make it bad. If we do it the right way, hopefully it'll be in the right way, you know.
If we can give kids and students the right tools, then they can teach themselves.
Exactly.
And it's not so much learning to pass a test.
Yeah, yeah. And kids these days are smart, you know, with their access to technology, and they probably even know more than me at this point. But it's being able to really provide an outlet for them to discover that themselves. I think that's something that's really key as well. So I'm excited for it, and I think that we're in a unique time where that could happen in a really meaningful way.
Daniel Vandiver, author of Fall in Line, Holden.
Thank you, Rachel. I really appreciate the invitation and being able to talk with you today.
Of course. Maybe we'll see you on November 18th when you're at the Children's Branch hearing Gallup, 2 p.m.
I would hope so.